Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast. And I am worried because in the last episode, there was like scratchiness going on all over the place. And I've done four podcasts since. And there's only one thing I can blame for this. I mean, obviously, my own technical inability to make things better. That's at least the silver medal. But it's Bob's very cashmere soft sweater. And I'm gonna rat you out. That's the same top you wore last Friday.
Is this?
Yes.
I have two sweaters, and I just rotate them because I work from home. I haven't put on a tie in about 4 years. And you know me, I used to wear ties. I used to wear ties to work all the time.
That's true.
I think that when you go to work, you should act like you're at work. But I'm never at work anymore. I am work.
Ooh. But I wonder, is it your hairy beard or your sweater that was picking up? So what I'm going to tell you is be careful with your mic placement.
I'll do what I can, although I'm pretty sure I wasn't scratching my hillbilly gym beard with the mic, but maybe I was.
I like what you did there. Get me off the trail by mentioning 80s wrestlers because you know that'll distract me. But I will agree with you on this. I own two sweaters as well. Maybe just, you know, I don't spend my money on fashion. Certainly not as much as I did in my 20s and early 30s. But two sweaters. I don't think you need more than two.
So my dad just turned 75. And he's, you know, he's 75. He walks around with his pants hiked up to just below his nipples. Mm-hmm. He's 75.
Yeah.
And there was pictures of him as a kid in the 60s on the streets. They used to call him Bobby Bullet or Bobby Bousted. He was the leader of a gang, and he had really thin ties and razor-sharp creases, and he was just the coolest guy. And I remember being a kid and knowing this was his history, and on the mantle, there was this picture of him and my mom and my sister and my baba, and they went to Disney World, and he's wearing these hiked-up shorts and a knockoff Seattle Seahawks t-shirt.
Yeah,
I remember thinking at the time, I was probably 12 years old, I was like, what happened to that guy? What happened? He was like literally the coolest guy in Parkdale. And now he's the guy in the knockoff Seattle Seahawks t-shirt from Towers. And now that I'm a little older, I get it.
Totally get it.
I get it.
It's a combination of you lose a little bit of testosterone. You lose a little bit of horny. You're not on the prowl for new sex. You have a good relationship with your partner and you feel that she is not leaving you. Thus, the
Matt,
pants.
Yeah. Ding, ding, ding. You only get dressed up when you want something or because you're sad.
Yeah.
You have to go to a funeral or something.
Yeah.
Or a wedding, I guess. Okay. So let's say for formal occasions, but on a daily basis, you get dressed up when you want something.
Yes.
And you know what a person after a certain time in life shouldn't do? Mm-hmm. Want anything.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
It just gets you into trouble.
I look back to my voracious appetites. I'm going to... That's my chimney click. It was my chimney click. When I was a younger man. And now I find that I'm a little more sedentary. Anyway, no, but yes, it's true. When you're in your 20s, you've got a lot more stylish clothes. And then you hit a certain point where two sweaters is enough.
So let's start trade deadline.
Okay.
Shall we? It's going to be kind of dull for the Leafs, I think.
Oh, it's going to be incredibly dull.
And most of the good pieces have been snapped up by others already.
Yeah.
Let me start here with you. Let's do our sadness ranking about players that went to other markets. And you give me on a scale of 1 to 10 how sad that makes you.
Right.
That they're not going to be Leafs.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Let me just flip through. Adam Henrique going to the Edmonton Oilers. Out of 10, how sad are you that he's not a Leaf?
That is almost a 7.
Yeah, me too.
That is almost a 7 because he works. It makes sense. He's a 20-goal guy. He wins over 54% of the faceoffs. He's gone on deep playoff runs. He's an adult. He can be your second line or your third line center. You need to move him at the wing. It would be a perfect upgrade to the second or third, your middle six forward lines. Yeah, 6.5 to a 7. I saw that move by Edmonton. I'm like, oh, that was a good move by you guys.
They say this makes them all in. It's not really an all in kind of move, but it is a smart move for them for the exact reasons you pointed out. It would be smart for the Leafs. I'm going to give this one 7.5. Mm-hmm. That as we got closer to trade deadline day, I started thinking, this was before Henrique went, oh boy, he's the right fit. And it was kind of like, he's a different player than Ryan O'Reilly, but there's a bit of the same thinking, which is, you know, you've got your core four, but we also see how it's hard for them to do everything in the playoffs. Somebody in the bottom or middle six is going to have to contribute who's not an 88, a 91, mm-hmm. a 34, or a 16.
Yep.
Right? Somebody else is going to have to do something. And Henrique felt like a good mix. Like, I like your point about him being a grown-up. I think that was a Ryan O'Reilly thing too, which is, look, we know David Kampf can stop goals. We know he can't score them. Yeah. We know that Max Domi can create offense.
Not good defensively.
For both teams. Yeah. He can create offense for both teams. He's very generous that
way. Yes, he is.
We don't know what we're getting from Tyler Bertuzzi. Hopefully, switch flips, but I think we're past that now. I think we just want him to not suck.
Yeah.
So Henrique, to me, felt like if you're going to do something and you're going to give up that first rounder, do it for someone that actually can make a substantial impact. And, you know, I heard Jonas and Myrtle talking about this on their pod the other day, and Jonas made a really good point, which is going out and getting another seventh or eighth defenseman at this point doesn't do that much for you.
No, because they're going to be playing 11 to 12 minutes a night. It doesn't mean as much. And I thought Henrique, he just solved a lot of mini problems. He doesn't solve the main problem. He doesn't put out the big fires, but he puts out all the small fires.
So I'm going to say Wenberg to New York then is probably like a 6 because he's not as good as Henrique.
But yeah, also, I'll go five.
Tarasenko to Florida is interesting because I don't think necessarily the Leafs want a Tarasenko, but how much better do you want your opponent to get? And he feels like he could be a good fit there.
That is 100% true.
Yeah. So out of 10, sadness to see that.
Sadness, that's an 8. And it's all because of Florida. I was talking about on the show yesterday. It was not a guy that the Leafs, you know, needed, but Florida's got the best points percentage in the NHL. They started the year kind of as a 500 team because their top defensemen were injured and because Matthew Tkachuk had a broken sternum last year in the summer. And then what happens at Christmas? All the defense are back, Tkachuk is healthy, and they're the hottest team in the league. So the best team in the league just got a guy that, you know, can provide depth scoring and high-end, not depth, actually depth scoring kind of insults Tarasenko. He could be high-end depth scoring. Like, he could be a difference maker in a game 5 of the second round.
Well, and you see, like, Tkachuk being able to, like, he's a guy who's going to put the, his job is now to put the puck in the net. He's not a playmaker, but Tkachuk is. Mm-hmm. And so he's just a really good fit for their best player, which you hate to see, because he just makes that team a little tougher to play, and they destroyed everyone last year except for Vegas.
Remember when the Kings, when they won their first Stanley Cup, they were the 8th seed, and it was a remarkable story where it felt like this, oh, this underdog team coming out of nowhere. Oh, I got to stop doing the Jiminy Glick. I really do. I'm
no,
sorry.
No, don't. You know? Don't. Let's just make it a runner. Oh. And honestly, Matt, you haven't stopped in the last 20 years.
Like, yeah, that's a good
point.
You
do Jiminy Glick all the time.
Yeah, it's a pretty damn good character. But then what did the Kings do after they won their first cup? Well, then they started going deep in the playoffs, and they won more Stanley Cups. It was like, oh, so the 8th-seeded, the Kings, they were more closely to a Stanley Cup champ than an 8th-seed. Last year, the Florida Panthers, they were an 8th-seed, and like, oh my God, they beat Boston. What's happening? And then they get to a Stanley Cup Finals, and now they're the best team in the NHL. It's like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe they are the real giants of the NHL.
I'm not going to say Boston's a fraud, but Boston's great numbers are also helped by their incredibly hot start this year. They haven't been that great since their super hot start, whereas Florida, to your point, is the opposite. Florida is the not exactly sleeping giant in the Eastern Conference. And I hate the idea of having to play them, and I hate the idea of them getting just a little bit better. I don't worry so much about Boston. I do, but not as much as Florida.
No.
So I'm with you on this one. I look at this. I don't know if I'd go 8, but I would go 7. Mm-hmm. 7 with sour grapes and schadenfreude.
Which is a bad I was thinking of a wine joke there, but we'll move on. Who's the next player?
Hanifin to Vegas.
Okay, fuck Vegas. Like,
I think I'm with you on this one.
They won the Stanley Cup last year on so much of it was the strength of their defense. where they had great players on the third pairing. They were basically healthy. I know Alex Martinez just got injured. I don't know the extent of it. But I'm like, wait a minute. Do they have the exact same six defensemen this year as they had last year? Yeah, they do. And then they go and add Noah Hanifin. I'm going to give this an 8 as well. But I give it an 8 because when you see how good Vegas's defense is, and then you compare it to the Maple Leafs' defense, and you realize just it's such a massive gap. And people can point to when the Penguins won, where Ron Hainsey played 59 minutes a game in the playoffs. But holy shit, is there a big gap? And they go, no, again, fuck Vegas. All they do is win. And they and I love when everyone's like, yeah, and they got Hanifin. And they have so much salary cap space, they can do more moves. And they have more prospects. And they have their first-round picks. When does that team get to suffer? When? When does that team... like literally get to suffer
at some point down the road. I remember hearing, and this was around the Gerard Gallant firing, that their ownership is obsessed with winning, but not in like a fun, like, yay, it's fun to win, a Steve mm-hmm. Ballmer kind of way.
Yeah.
But in a kind of a, I don't understand not winning. I pay you to win. And now I'm going to make your life hell.
But it works for them.
I think their ownership is not realistic, but they're all in.
But there's other ownership groups that are obsessive psychos. But for Vegas, everything, and I know it goes back to they just were able to manipulate the system when they first came in the league and took on bad contracts to get prospects and players.
How do you
players.
Think Gary Bettman feels about this deal? Oh, no.
Yeah.
Vegas looks really strong going into the playoffs.
Oh,
again.
No. Hey, Winnipeg, you've got low attendance. Oh, no. I'm so sorry for you. I hope you're okay.
I'm going to put the Casey Mittelstadt to Colorado deal in this bucket, too. Well, and I'm going to say it's an 8 out of 10 sadness because the Knights and the Avs are in. They're in it. And the Leafs, in theory, are supposed to be teams that good, yeah. right? We've been hearing for years, oh, they're a top 5 team, they're a top 6 team. Now they're in the middle of the pack, and they're doing small deals and keeping their powder dry for the summer. And you think, wait a minute, but we were supposed to be really aggressive and in the thick of things. Like, and I want to have a broader thought on this, but even just for like the fun of feeling like you're in the hunt, I don't feel like we're in the hunt this year. I know we are. I know we are.
Sort of.
It's that awful phrase when you're a sports fan, which is puncher's chance.
Yeah, puncher's chance. Hey.
You got a puncher's chance to make the final.
Hey, you know what? All you got to do is get in. Because once you get in, anything can happen.
You know what they don't say? All you got to do is get into. Yeah. You know who they don't say that to? Hmm. The really good teams.
Yeah. Oh, God.
All you got to do is get in.
And Colorado, who won the Cup 2 years ago. Here's how good Colorado is on defense. They traded Bowen Byram. They traded him to Buffalo, but they don't have to worry about it because they've got Manson and McCarr and Taves and they've got all this talent. Byram would be the clear number two best defenseman on the Maple Leafs, and some people would be like, you know, he's actually better than Morgan Rielly.
And he's young.
And Colorado's like, we have so many other, but after we lost Kadri, haven't been able to replace, we need more centers. So Colorado
it's
is
like
another
Mick
reminder.
Jagger in 1978 going to Studio 54 with a car, a limo full of 8 models.
Yeah.
And only 7 of them actually go into the disco with him, mm-hmm. and he doesn't notice.
Yeah.
The 8th is missing.
It's like, huh? Oh.
Oh.
Yeah, where'd Tiffany
okay.
go?
Yeah. Oh, she went home? Yeah. Okay, cool. Imagine Matt Cause mm-hmm. at 25 years old going to Studio 54
yes.
and a supermodel didn't come in with him.
Yeah.
How sad would you be then?
I would be...
You would notice?
I would notice. I'd be like, I better not get another sweater. This has been a disaster.
You're only a cashmere sweater away from being a menace to microphones, but a menace to the ladies too, man.
Oh, call back.
Yeah, and I wonder to an extent, like there's my inadvertent Jiminy Glick. I wonder.
So, Steven Spielberg, when are you going to do the big one?
I'm not convinced that the Leafs should be all in at this deadline because I don't think they're good enough. But at the same time, I'm not sure that being this cautious is a good idea. Like if they wind up only adding Labushkin, I don't know if they're like, I don't know. I don't think it's fun, but I wonder to what extent the Leafs are a little bit stagnant corporately right now. I feel like they're just in a little bit of a... They used to be in fight or flight. They used to be fighting. I feel like they're kind of frozen in fear right now. They don't know what to make of themselves and they don't want to fuck up.
They're comfortable.
Are they comfortable or are they just unsure?
Well, maybe. You know what? I'm not sure. But maybe they're your dad at Disneyland. They're like, We've got all our stars signed to long-term deals. It's sold out. Yeah, we do enough winning in the regular season. But again, that's unfair. I mean, obviously they want to win.
The fucking Canucks make a deal for Elias Lindholm.
And now they're going to trade him.
15 games. It's like, this isn't working out. But Jake Gensel's looking good over there. When did the Canucks become so much more fun to follow than the Leafs?
Because
I thought the Leafs were supposed to be, under Dubas, this nutty team that was doing nutty things all the time and just strapping and go, you know, max power, strapping and feel the G's.
Because they got Jim Rutherford. You know, that's there's the right way, there's the wrong way, and there's the Rutherford way. How's that? Well, it's
which is all the ways,
which is all the ways, but much, much faster and harder.
And then Dubas has to figure out what to do with Gensel, and the league is like, this guy again with the.
Oh, we'll get to the Penguins. The Penguins are the David Copperfield of the NHL. They are a complete magic trick. But the problem is now, as we're recording on Thursday, and by the way, over the next couple hours, don't fucking do anything. Because after we're done, I got to go visit my dad. Then I'm going to edit, put this out. So this comes out at 4:30. And like, you guys are idiots. But
well, and like Colton Parayko and Jake Chychrun are Maple Leafs.
You know what? Bobby actually answered the question. It's like, who's the guy? And it would have to be a Parayko, but I don't want to say that name because then you get made fun of. It's like, oh, there's Leafs Twitter. Why is Parayko trending? Because of Leaf fans being desperate. But there's
he was trending the other day and I got sucked in by Twitter again where it's like, no, because Leafs were right underneath. But of course they're right underneath. It's great deadline season. But I saw Parayko and then Leafs and I was like, no way.
And then below that's Nikki Haley. Like, wow, my.
We get Nikki Haley? I guess she's looking for a gig right now.
She is, but one of those two people, that would be the only ones that would move the needle. If you look at the TSN trade bait board, the defenseman left, it's like, you know, okay, Mark Savard. All right. I mean, that's a new look.
Potato soup, Matt Dumba just ain't going to do it. Yep. He's an app. This is what we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody gets excited about broth.
They really don't.
So Keith Pelly, we've brought this up a few times, but I just think it's so important and nobody's talking about this, is that they're going to have a new corporate head. Shanahan is going to have to answer to somebody directly. And you and I know Keith from his time at TSN, and I got to know Keith personally.
Yeah.
He kind of took me under his wing as a bit of a mentor. I'm not going to be objective about him. I think he's a brilliant guy and I think he's a great guy, but he's a risk taker. He's going to come in. And if this team doesn't do well over the summer, this is the guy who put puppets on TSN. This is the guy who, you know, let European tour. Oh, let's just do 9 holes. We'll do 3 holes. Fuck it. Let's just see what happens. Let's just shake things up. He is the last guy to sit on his laurels. And if this team comes in and is sleepy in the playoffs and has a first or second run, first or second round out, he's going to be like, guys, we're not running this back.
Yeah.
Ball's in your court. We're not running it back. What are we going to do? I feel so strongly that this team is either going to make the third round minimum or be shaken up.
What you don't want is the season to end where it sounds like the last bit of ketchup, you know, and you're just in the giant plastic bottle and you're shaking it and you're like
one of the world's most uncomfortable and yet funny sounds.
Yeah, but also unsatisfying. It's the sound of the Blue Jays losing to the Minnesota Twins. And it was the sound of the Maple Leafs scoring 2 goals a game in 5 games against Florida. And that's what you don't want. The team to end the year sounding like the empty ketchup container, but you need to get a little more ketchup for your eggies.
The approach, by the way, that's a brilliant analogy. And the Twins and Jays, that is a really good emotional avatar for how people have felt about the Leafs playoffs outs. I kind of feel like the way they've approached this deadline is Shanahan saying, if we fuck up, I'll let Keith hang for this. I'm not going to make any big deals and then have it be like your deals didn't work. I feel like this is Keith's last stand and it's being designed like you're either going to get success out of this team or you're fired. But it's also like with Shanahan, everything's like, who's my meat shield? Mm-hmm. Who can I get behind so no one notices the Shanna plan has turned into nothing? Maybe that's a little harsh, but at a certain point,
you look at it's an entirety. You look at it, you take a step back, you look at it, its entirety, and it's been a failure.
I don't think there's a deal for them to do. And the cupboard is so bare. I don't know how much one first rounder is going to make a difference, but getting rid of it at this point, like, it's all they have is this first rounder.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I was hoping for Adam Henrique when he got traded. That's maybe 8 out of 10 is even what hit me sad, because I felt like he's, to your point, just the right fit. And the fact that the Leafs are kind of boring right now is a bit of a drag.
Well, they play Boston tonight. They lose 5-1. They become exciting again for all the wrong reasons. And then the thing I wondered about is if they don't do anything, I wonder if Matthews and Nylander and Marner and all these guys go, oh, we have to, there's so much on their shoulders, rightfully so. Well, it's one of the reasons why they don't have more on defense. Well, they spent all their money at forward. And I wonder if they realize, oh, we've got to score and we've got to defend because McCabe and Liljegren are on the ice.
Okay, I don't think they're not doing that, though. Matthews is a very good two-way player.
He's a great two-way player.
And Marner is playing on the penalty kill. And, you know, he's not going to be a, you know, he's not Patrice Bergeron. But I don't feel terrible when he's out there. And even Nylander has started to take his defensive responsibilities more seriously.
A couple lazy laps here and there, but yes, sure. But certainly better.
Sure. And but to blame it on one winger that we have defensive problems is just not how hockey works. The defense is just not that good. The idea that the Leafs don't play forward, like the forwards don't play defense, it's not as true as it used to be. They're just not good on defense. They're really thin. Look, your point about Vegas, your point about Colorado, look at those defensive teams.
Like, I know.
They're incredible. And when you think about the teams that Tampa had during the main part of its run, it had Hedman at the top and then Sergachev. They were really good.
This also goes to another question. How long it'll be before a Canadian team wins a Stanley Cup? Taxes are higher and all of that. Also, NHL players in general, this is a generalization, are not designed for pressure. They love warm weather and they love to golf with no one bugging them. They don't want the limelight that you get being in Canada. You hear lots of stories of players saying, I'd rather be in the States. Noah Hanifin was the most recent one.
And he's American.
That's fine. Or Tarasenko's got family in Florida. Great. You're no trade clause. You went there. I don't kill Ottawa for what they got back. But the one thing I don't hear about, and beyond Tavares, how many needle-moving hockey players are like, yeah, I need to get back to Canada. I want to play in Canada. I don't see that very often, but I'm now seeing more and more where Gaudreau and Tkachuk are like, I'm on a 115-point win team with Jacob Markstrom and net. Now I want to go to Columbus.
I'm going to respond to that with a quote from Bill Murray.
Okay.
And then I'll explain the quote, and I think it'll answer your question. Bill Murray once said, people always come to me and say, I want to be rich and famous. And I say to them, try just rich first and see how that goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you play hockey in the States, you get to be rich but not famous, which is literally winning life. Fame is a jail. It sucks. It's kind of fun for a while. It would be like marrying a nymphomaniac or having a newspaper column. Mm-hmm. Like, it's fun for 10 weeks, but then you're just exhausted and confused all the time.
You're not doing better than that, Bob. Let's see. 23 minutes in. You're not doing better than that analogy. An infomaniac or a newspaper columnist. Fun for a while, but then you're tired and it's confusing.
So if I said to you, Matt, you could live somewhere warm. You could live in Naples, Florida.
Mm.
Tax-free.
Yeah.
Or Canada.
Yeah.
And do exactly the same thing.
No, it's Naples.
Of course it is. Who would it not be Naples for?
You know, the problem is we needed like 100 years ago to convince everyone that shoveling snow, being cold, staying inside, salt stains was awesome. And it was the one thing you don't want, a nice cool breeze at 7 o'clock at night while staring out at a body of water. Because it's, you know, I'm always fascinated about just the advantages that like the Lakers get just because of their history. And because there's Hollywood, there's the Pacific Ocean. And I really have been thinking about this more and more, about what a disadvantage it is to be a general manager of a Canadian hockey team.
Heat culture. Heat culture is just heat because it's warm out. That's heat culture.
Yeah.
Remember stories about like Alonzo Mourning? Who are they trying to woo over there? They're trying to get some player. It was like, was it Tim Duncan or someone? Anyways, they were trying to get someone down there. And they picked him up on a jet ski. Mm-hmm. Took him over to Pat Riley's house so they could dock at the and walk in.
That is true. Oh, I'm angry. Yes, I've heard that story. I've heard that story many times. It is such a disadvantage. And the players prefer it where there's not as much pressure on them and the taxes and all of that. Like I've been thinking about that recently, just about the degree of difficulty.
So let me throw this at you. Thing that happens first, NDP in opposition or a Canadian team wins the cup?
Provincial or federal?
Federal. Federal opposition. They did it under Jack Layton.
Yeah, you know
what? Which is kind of like saying, hey, you know, Sens made the final in 2006.
Pistons won a title without a truly elite player. I'm going to go with NDP. Honestly, I you just see these little trends, and there's ways you can push back on me, like, oh no, Pierre-Luc Dubois would have gone to Montreal. Yeah, he would have. He's in LA now. I just see these trends over and over of, and it's not even players saying they hate Canada. It's just, you know what? If they had their druthers, they'd prefer to play in the States. And what I'd love to see, all the star players, I want revealed the teams on your no trade clause. Like, here are the teams I will not go to. And I want to know, what is that percentage of American places versus Canadian?
I don't even like to fly over Winnipeg.
I've never been.
It's actually not that bad. It's actually kind of nice. But if I had to think about where would I live, I would live in Winnipeg if it paid me $7 million a year more than mm-hmm. L.A.
Yeah.
But given both, and it's not even like I love L.A., but it's a winter sport. It's brutal. I mean, Vancouver's not so brutal. Vancouver's pretty good. But everywhere else, it's fucking cold.
You're getting paid in American dollars to be in Canada. Doesn't that offset the tax thing to a certain extent? And California's got massive taxes.
I heard once on Merrick's show, and I don't know if this is true, but
it's probably not. Yeah, it's on his show.
That gets full of shit.
But, yeah. The Alex Jones of the NHL. It's often been said about Jeff Merrick. Wow,
that is dark. That is a dark, sorry, dark Jeffy. Thing. Yeah, no kidding. That, maybe Jiminy Glick should apologize to Jeff right now.
I might have been wrong with that one.
sometimes players like to play in the warmer climates because it's easier to heal.
Oh, interesting.
And it actually can add a year or two to their careers because just the sun mm-hmm. and the easiness of the winters versus living through these brutal cold winters, your body responds to it much better year round.
God, I never even thought about that.
I never thought of it either, but it's an interesting point. If you could live in Arizona or you could live in California, Florida, you know, we always talk about, I'm going to go down there and feel good, you know, and all that great vitamin D.
It's, wow, I never even thought of it. That's a great point. All right, I just thought of this off the top of my head. I've been making these jokes with everyone gone in the NHL trade deadline. I asked James Duffy, would you get rid of half a season of golf if it meant that tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., Kyle Dubas traded Sidney Crosby? And then an hour later, he traded Malkin. An hour later, Letang and Carlson. I mean, mix up the order. Actually, flip the order around. Do it the opposite way just to make the NHL trade deadline more interesting. Here's a hot take. Sidney Crosby must demand to be traded to a Canadian city because it's time for Cole Harbour's brightest boy to bring a Stanley Cup north of the border. Crosby must demand. Oh, I wish I was doing my show tomorrow. I've already thought of my opening thought. Tomorrow I'll be all about the Oscars. Crosby must demand to go to a Canadian team and bring Canada a Stanley Cup.
Okay, so I'm going to throw a dot, dot, dot question into this.
All right.
He must do that or what?
Retire?
What's this like? Was he Hacksaw Jim Duggan? Is this a loser-must-leave-town match?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. Him and the Hillbilly Boys, you know?
It was Hillbilly Jim. Do you remember his partner?
Cousin Eddie? No.
Close. It was Uncle Elmer.
Uncle Elmer. Oh, and Captain Lou Albano sometimes was their manager. This is so stupid. Who had more denim? Jay Leno family reunion or the Hillbilly Boys?
Oh, I'm going to go with the Jay Leno family reunion. What I loved about Jay Leno is he embraced his non-celebrityness, mm-hmm. wearing the faded acid wash jeans. He was just such a nerd, but he was also such an alpha celebrity. Mm-hmm. Like, he was so calculated and cold and just, you know, firing his manager who got him the gig when it wasn't working out in that first year. Like, he was so calculated, but he just looked like an everyman.
But it wasn't an act. He still does like little web things with all his cars, still wearing it. You know, you see him out there on TMZ. That man is dedicated to denim. Anyway, obviously, I'm fucking around.
He's dressed like Samantha Fox. He looked like a Samantha Fox.
Wow. Anyone listening, Google that. Nothing said, I am so excited to see a nipple in 1983 like Samantha Fox.
Well, I was going with the denim top and bottom.
No, that was really well done. That was a deep pull.
I got a hot take for you. All right. Rest of the Oscars.
Yeah, yeah.
Jimmy Kimmel's hosting.
Yes,
We're all excited about that. Here's my hot take. Jimmy Kimmel does a better job than Billy Crystal did as host of the Oscars.
Get the fuck out of here. Get now. Okay.
A better job.
I'm going to go with no, but I will say this. Because I always love and embrace the idea of the conversation about degree of difficulty. The degree of difficulty for what Jimmy Kimmel has to do is so much higher. Okay, how about this? Jimmy Kimmel, what he's doing now, it's like when someone would score 40 goals in the NHL after the 04 lockout.
Yeah, the dead puck era.
The dead puck era. I will give him credit. He makes it more exciting, and he does a damn good job in a time where it is so hard, and there's all the criticism on social media, and now about, you know, political correctness and wokeness and all of that.
Matt, you're making my point for me.
I know I am.
This is exactly my point, is that you have to adjust for era. I loved Billy Crystal. That's the whole point. Everybody loved Billy Crystal, and they went into the Oscars wanting to love it. And it was supposed to be 4 hours long. We thought that was awesome. Why couldn't it be 4.5 hours? And everyone saw all the movies and you actually care who won. And there were parties everywhere. Like, it was very common. It was like your Super Bowl party. Let's get out the flutes of champagne. Billy Crystal, I love this guy. And then poor Jimmy Kimmel has to try and host this thing with movies that nobody's heard of. And everybody's angry. And they basically decide before the ceremony starts, okay, what is going to be our woke cause of the day?
Yeah.
And everybody has to hashtag around that. It's the opposite of funny. Nobody wants to see an opening montage anymore, like those hilarious things they would cut, the tape pieces they would do.
Yes. Oscar, Oscar, and then Billy Crystal would, you know, it would be Jack Nicholson, and then it would be Billy Crystal, and he would be Sammy Davis Jr., and you know what? No one got angry the next day that it was Sammy Davis Jr. Sure, he was in a bit of blackface, but he was more imitating and honoring one of the greats, and he wasn't trying to denigrate an entire race.
He was playing a friendly room.
He was playing a friendly room.
He was playing a friendly room. And Jimmy Kimmel...
Sorry, I've got to interrupt. A lot fewer bracelets when Billy Crystal was doing it. I'm sorry.
But Kimmel's still funny. Kimmel still does a good job.
He is.
Again, to use a phrase from last pod, he's swimming with jeans on.
It's true. It's a great debate. The thing is, I love Kimmel. I was so excited he's doing it. I'm also the guy on Friday or Saturday night when Amy's away, I'll be just watching 20-minute rabbit hole of Billy Crystal songs while drinking.
Billy Crystal was hilarious and great at this. But Kimmel had to come on after they announced the wrong Best Picture.
Yep.
And try and make sense of that shit.
Yeah.
He's had a lot of curveballs thrown his way, and he has always handled it with grace. And, you know, Ricky Gervais went probably too far in the direction. Like, I love that he took the piss out of that whole crowd, but then it just became mean stand-up after a while.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing that Kimmel does, and this is like, Crystal loves Hollywood. You can just see he just loves Hollywood. And Ricky Gervais was so much more social media Twitter about it. He was, let's lampoon Hollywood. This thing's phony. And this is what Twitter's so good for, is these pithy little jabs at you. He was like the new host that was like us at home. You know, fuck this guy. You know, and he was doing that on stage. But Kimmel strikes a balance between loving it and seeing how bullshit it is. And that's such a hard thing to do, too.
It is really, really hard. By the way,
I'm winning you over. I see it. I see it in your face.
No, no, yeah.
Your face is an ice sculpture. 6 hours later, it's starting to melt.
What I'm thinking of is, you know, when you hear the NBA conversation of the player, man, imagine how much they would score now. You know, like when LeBron.
Yeah, adjust for age.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The adjust
Crystal's
for age.
George Mikan.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go George Mikan, but Jimmy Kimmel feels like he could play in any era. And I'll admit, part of me with Billy Crystal, there is a nostalgia thing there. He was brilliant at it. I'll say this. It's a good argument. I think you can go either way. At least this year, finally, Kimmel gets an easier year. Oppenheimer, Barbie, massive movies. I think everyone is a little bit less off their soapbox, and hopefully celebrities realize you're not, it's hard for you to try to save the world and then get in your private jet, something we've talked about before. Not that, you know, again, celebrities, I love the ones who do all the charity work and all that kind of jazz. This is an easier year for Kimmel this year.
So I've got a bunch of Oscar questions for you.
Yeah.
I don't know if these are hot take questions or just, but you and I love the Oscars.
Yep.
We love movie history. Mm-hmm. We'll both be watching.
Every second.
It feels like a lot more people are into it this year. And it's pretty simple. There's more people watched more movies this year.
Mm-hmm.
Which Best Picture nominee will we most remember in 10 years?
I'm going to go a little off the board. Poor Things.
Interesting. Interesting choice.
She was really, Emma Stone was really good, and it just had such this distinctive look. And Mark Ruffalo got you comedy. It was also sometimes grim and hard to watch, but it looked great, and it was an oddly, it had a satisfying ending. Like Artie Film where William Dafoe is even more fucked up looking. I know the ending's going to either be depressing or confusing, but this one, it had a very just a satisfying ending. So I'm going to throw that one out there first.
I'm going to make a comparison. It reminds me a bit of Fisher King at the Oscars, where you have an arty movie that's kind of weird, made by a real auteur, with big stars and great performances. And it might just find a lane. Like, there's something really magical about an art film that isn't boring.
Oh, and Mercedes Rule, she won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress.
Yep.
We'll see. Emma Stone's for Leading Actress.
Well, this is one of my questions. Do you want to get to it? You want to just jump ahead right now? Or do you want me to answer which movie I think we're going to talk about?
No. Which one? You answer that. Yeah.
I would have said Oppenheimer, because I do think that's going to enter the canon of great films.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually think it's Barbie. And I don't think it's Barbie because Barbie was so good. It's because Barbie made $1.5 billion. And it's the movie that basically, like, you couldn't have had Barbenheimer without Barbie.
No.
If Oppenheimer just came out on its own, then
it doesn't make nearly as much.
It doesn't make nearly as much. We don't talk about it nearly as much. It's still a brilliant film. I think it's the best film I've seen this year. I think Cillian Murphy was incredible. Christopher Nolan is a genius. We'll get more to him and them later. But in terms of what shook up the industry and maybe even saved it to an extent, like, Barbie became an event. Yeah. And we haven't had an event. Like, think about when we were kids and you went and saw one of the Star Wars movies and you'd line up. Like, I saw lineups at the movie. Now, they were for the, you know, Barbie selfie box that I broke.
Rest in power.
But I think in 10 years, we're going to look back at this moment about Barbenheimer as being a moment that was a bit of a TSN turning point. And I think that has more to do with Barbie than Oppenheimer.
I agree with you, because we've seen the Oppenheimer in the past. Big, sweeping movie that's connected with some historical thing. Famous director. But Barbie, in a way, is like a higher-end version of the Lego movie. Where the original idea, wait a minute.
That's a great analogy.
You're going to make a movie out of Lego? And it's a great movie. Everything is awesome. It was so well done. It was so well executed. And wait a minute, you're going to make a movie about Barbie? What's the story? What's going on? And they managed to pull it off. Yeah, I would agree with you. I would think out of those two, I think Barbie will be the one that's more remembered. I've seen Oppenheimer 3 times, but again, I don't have children.
Yeah, it's long. So that's about 10 hours of Oppie.
It's almost, close to 10 hours. Yeah.
How's the gambling action on the Oscars this year? You cover a lot of gambling on your show. Will you do the odds for Oscars?
Bad. It's the Oscars this year is like when Kevin Durant was with Golden State. Top heavy, and we know who's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't a lot of, like, the closest competition for, like, one of the glamour ones is...
Yeah, the big six.
Of the big six, there's only one. Like Oppenheimer's like minus 2,000 or the minus 3,500. That's ridiculous. You know, that's like when Golden State was up 3-0 with Kevin Durant against the Cavs. Not the year before where Cleveland came back to win. The only one where there's sort of a debate is the actress from Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah, I was going to say,
versus
Emma Stone versus Lily Gladstone.
Yeah, well, thank you. Gladstone versus Emma Stone.
So this was one of the things I want to say to your gambling audience.
Yeah.
Is I think that's actually a pretty good bet to go with Emma Stone. Lily Gladstone has gotten better odds, but I heard this case being made by Matt Bellany about how she is primed to win her second Oscar. She produces now. Everybody loves her. She worked hard. And she took what then the him and Bill Simmons were talking about this. It made total sense. Risky role. They love the risky role. When you're a guy and you put on weight, mm-hmm. that's a big plus. And when you're a woman and you take off your clothes,
yeah,
it's a big plus because it's risky.
One is about plus size men and the other is... I was going to do some plus thing with breasts, but we'll just, we talked about it last week. Emma Stone, naked all over it. I've gone back and forth on this one so much. I was all for Lily Gladstone. I thought she was fantastic. I keep going back and thinking about everything that Emma Stone did in Poor Things. Like, it was, she was incredible. I mean, it was such a difficult role to do.
But as you know, the Oscar usually goes to the person with the best narrative, not necessarily the best performance, because it's so subjective.
Yeah.
Unless there's a clear standout winner, it's usually like Robert Downey's going to win. Mm-hmm. And is he the best supporting actor of the year? I don't know. Maybe, kind of. Hard to say, but definitely he's earned it.
He's earned it. And he was great.
And
they
love to give it to the people who have quote unquote earned it.
The tough thing here is this balance, because you want to always praise, you want to praise Gladstone. And if she wins, I won't complain. And I'm a guy that sometimes I'm sitting there, I'll yell at my TV if certain people win, if certain people lose. This might be unfair to say, but this falls into the narrative and sort of the predictable nature of Hollywood. If we had recently had a run of several other Native American actors and actresses winning major awards over the last 5 or 6 years, I would throw all my money on Emma Stone.
Mm-hmm.
But because we haven't, that's why I'm giving pause for the betting.
So I actually think America Ferrera is going to win for Best Supporting Actress.
Get the fuck out of here.
I do. I think she's
no way.
Win. I do. I don't think it's going to be Emily Blunt because I think they're going to give so many awards to Oppenheimer.
Hold on. No. But Devine, I need to pull up the list. The actress from The Holdovers, she is going to win that.
Nope. It's going to be America Ferrera. Do you want to put a little side action on this?
You what? What do you want? What do you want?
How about lunch somewhere?
Okay. Done.
Lunch on the other person somewhere.
Lunch. It's going to be Divine Joy Randolph. You know, when I was younger, I'd have all the names right off the top of my head. Divine Joy Randolph.
Okay, let's pick a spot.
Okay.
Not too expensive. It's got to be an under $25 lunch.
Under 25. You mean like the entree is
$25? Yeah. Okay. I'm not buying drinks, by the way, if we lose. Like, you buy your own drinks. No drink tickets.
This is such horse shit.
It's a $25 bet. I'll pick up your fucking lunch. You pick up mine.
All right.
What about Zets? No, not Zets. What's the Greek place over just across from the Toronto Sun? Betty's.
Betty's is no longer there.
No way.
Yeah.
Sad. It was a good place.
All right. We'll find a place where it's a $40 to $50 total lunch.
Yeah.
Okay.
California sandwiches?
Sure.
Okay.
Divine Joy Randolph is
Let's
winning.
See. All right. America Ferrera is going to win.
In fact, if she doesn't win, I'm going to be angry. Not because I would have lost the bet. I am rooting hard for her to win it.
I'm going to watch that movie tonight.
Oh, it's okay. Oh, so you haven't seen The Holdovers,
have you?
Yet. Oh, you ignorant slut. After you watch it, Bob, you're going to be like, welp, bye-bye lunch. Goodbye.
I met Paul Giamatti once.
Strobopoulos,
when he was had the talk show at CBC, mm-hmm. Invited me to one of his TIFF parties.
Mm-hmm.
And Giamatti was there. And I was so lit up, Matt. I was so... Apparently, I met Johnny Rotten and hung out with him. I don't remember.
Oh, no.
Yeah. What I do remember is, like, basically... Like George's like, hey, this is Paul Giamatti. This is my friend Bob, you know. And I came in and I was super hammered and I was like, hey, buddy. And I remember him looking at me and just saying, hi, it's nice to meet you. And thinking, even as drunk as I was, God, this guy is a class act because I'm such an asshole right now. And he's still humoring me. And he's Paul Giamatti. His dad's Bart Giamatti. And I'm nobody except this drunk. I'm like, thank you, Paul. If you're listening to the pod, and I know you are, thank you.
And by the way, Paul, there's nothing wrong with Merlot. This is going to be a horrible...
Sideways reference?
Yes.
Okay.
This is going to be a horrible, disgusting line by me.
Okay. Should I just brace myself?
I'm saying this off the top.
Okay.
If I had a choice between a movie where it's how I actually acted when I was super drunk and I had to actually see the real footage. And that was door number one. And door number two is either a snuff film.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Or a movie of how my mom conceived me and Josh.
Oh,
I'm not saying I would pick that, but I'd have to consider it.
Man, you must really love Merlot.
Who doesn't?
Oh my God. Now that's the funniest line of the pod. That is just so dark and incredible. You know, when you see a picture of yourself and you go, actually, I thought I looked better than that.
Yeah.
It's times 100 as soon as you add alcohol.
So again,
I always know you're drunk. You have a tell. Your eye starts to drift.
Mm.
It's really weird, but I don't know whether it's left or right, or it could be either. But as soon as your eye starts to drift, I always know. Time to get a cab.
Yeah.
Because we're going in different directions.
Yeah.
I got a quick question for you here, and this one's a real tough one. Christopher Nolan's going to be best director.
Mm-hmm.
You get to put one Christopher Nolan movie in a time capsule for 100 years from now.
Mm.
Which one do you pick?
All right. I'm going to... That's tough. Do you have one off the top of your head as I'm stalling to pull the list up in front of me?
I'm going
to
say Inception. Because okay. I think it's his best film. I might say Oppenheimer because of the historical importance of it and the way he documents a time. And it's just such a masterful movie. But his best movie is still Inception. And he does the thing that I think I like the best in all Hollywood movies. Of all the great kinds of movies there are, a smart action film might be the top of the list. So Inception for me.
The Dark Knight?
That's the other one. That's, to me, those are the big three. You have to pick from one of those three. Because that's a masterful movie, too.
I'm going The Dark Knight first.
First?
Yep.
Is that because of the obsession with the Joker?
No. The Dark Knight first, Oppenheimer second. The real thing is third, because you have Inception, but Interstellar and The Prestige. I'm sorry.
Yeah, both great films.
Oh, that is so tough. That is five, like the Mount Rushmore. By the way, Dunkirk, good movie. I'm still afraid to see Tenet. I hear it'll confuse me.
Mm-hmm.
But I will go with The Dark Knight, but the gap between first, second, and third is like a 100-meter dash where it's just like, and not one with Usain Bolt in it, where everyone is only off by a little bit.
After The Lord of the Rings, Peter Jackson was the Hollywood champ, and it goes from person to person every so often. Oppenheimer's going to win. He's going to be the reigning champ, Christopher Nolan is. But for the Killers of the Flower Moon, there's going to be an interesting front row of people sitting there. And here's my question. Which one of these people represents the Hollywood that you love the most?
Ooh.
Robert De Niro, Leo DiCaprio, Martin Scorsese, all attached to this film. When you watch this and you see the camera cut to one of these three people, which one is going to be the one that reminds you how much you love Hollywood the most?
It's not Leo. And it's nothing against him. He's incredible. He might be the next... You know, he might be the Jack Nicholson.
He's the new Jack Nicholson. If he's not at the awards feel flatter.
So then it's Scorsese or it's De Niro. I have to go with De Niro, with apologies to Goodfellas. But I go with De Niro because I get gritty 70s boxing. I get Godfather 2. I get Cape Fear. I get I get him and Charles Grodin. I get a nice laugh. As well.
Midnight Run, good reference.
Midnight Run, you know, I get the Oscar wins.
Bronx Tale, heartwarming.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with De Niro first, Scorsese second, and Leo third.
I'm going to go Leo third, and no knock on him.
No, but it's the other two guys you have there on that list.
Exactly. It's got to be Scorsese first, though. He's having a moment, and he's the champion of Hollywood right now. He took on Marvel movies, which nobody else had the guts to do. And he kind of pointed out, you know, these kind of are sucking the life out of everything. And he was right. And shortly thereafter, they started to suck themselves, too.
Yeah.
That's worse than I meant it to. But
that's why you do yoga. Cheap joke.
Yeah, it's all good. But Scorsese, because he's always been great. De Niro, there's a long stretch there where he kind of Michael Caine'd out.
Okay, it's a fair point. De Niro certainly has more duds than Scorsese. Scorsese, I don't even know if Scorsese has a dud.
I don't think he has a dud.
No, the worst moment is actually involving De Niro when he got De Niro to do the fighting and kicking the guy in The Irishman. That was the worst CGI. That was just such a cringe moment.
You referred to Raging Bull just a few minutes ago. Did you know that when Scorsese made that film, there's this one scene where he's getting, Jake LaMotta is getting the shit beaten out of him. And he actually went to Psycho and reproduce the fight cut by cut according to Psycho with the slash marks. Like, when someone was getting hit, when someone was attacking.
Really?
Like, if you watch it, they sync up perfectly. He reproduced the psycho shower scene for the Raging Bull beatdown scene.
That man needed a hobby. Jesus.
He's like, insane. So I love Francis Ford Coppola, but there's just too many stretches where there's not good.
Yeah.
He's our greatest living director, I think you have to say. Certainly American. So, yeah, I'm going to go Scorsese. How much time do we have?
We have about 5 minutes.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, I got a new segment called Head to Head.
All right.
Oh, wait. I got one more question.
Yeah.
Oppenheimer, Leonard Bernstein, Napoleon, Golda Meir, Barbie. A lot of big biopics this year. If you could make a biopic of anyone, who would it be?
If I could make a biopic of anyone. Wow, you know, yes, these are very hard questions.
Let me go first.
Okay.
I want to make one of Robbie Robertson. Mm. I think that would be a great story. And you could have all these amazing cameos, like who's going to play Dylan, who's going to play Scorsese, who's going to play, you know, the people at the last waltz, who's going to be the other guys in the band. It's such a great story, you know, him coming from Canada and then finding Ronnie Hawkins and becoming one of the greatest rock and roll songwriters and guitar players of all time. And he's just so fucking cool. For a long time, I thought like Johnny Depp would have made a good Robbie Robertson.
But then the court case with Amber Heard and that sort of ended that.
Less now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's also a role that somebody could come on, like if you were just kind of cool, like a Harry Dean Stanton kind of cool. Not the look, obviously, but yeah. So Robbie Robertson for me would be an amazing biopic. That's my Oppenheimer.
I'm going to have to pass for now because I want to come up with a great answer. My brain is going through all these different people. All right.
This is going to be fast here. It's called Head to Head because all sports bits in the end is just who you got.
Yeah.
Right? Head to Head. Golden State over Milwaukee the other night by 35. Crazy. Golden State is awake. Golden State or the Lakers? Who goes further this year?
Golden State goes further than the Lakers. And also, Karl Anthony Towns could be done for the year. That 8th seed in the NBA playoffs, pretty good.
All right. Jake Paul versus Tyson. They just announced that fight on Netflix.
I love
who
it.
You got?
I love it. I got Mike Tyson because you can't control crazy. There might be a script and some, well, Jake Paul, remember he fought Floyd Mayweather. Floyd Mayweather only cares about money and is a boring fighter unless you're a hardcore boxing fan.
How old is Tyson now?
50.
Just 50?
Or no, I think he's 60.
Yeah,
60 he must be 60 years old. Here's what I want to have happen. I want In the Air Tonight playing, and right at the drum beat where Mike Tyson punched Ed Helms, I want at that moment for him to knock out Paul.
I guess I've got two things that go through my brain on this. One is Dredrick Tatum when they save Homer by airlifting him out of the ring. I feel like that's going to be Jake Paul.
Yes.
And the other thing is, sorry here, I just lost my notes. Who the hell is Jake Paul? And how did he become so famous? This is like one of those things, like when Metallica became the biggest band in the world.
And he's a male Kardashian.
Oh, that's actually a really good way to put it.
Yeah.
Do you remember we were talking to Razor Ruddock, mm-hmm. who fought Tyson twice?
Yes.
And I remember I asked him, what's it like being punched in the face by Tyson? And could I do it? And he's like, no, you would die. It was very matter of fact. I don't think he was doing a bit. He was like, no, he'd punch your head right off. Okay. Shrimp or crab as an entree. Who you got?
As an entree, it is crab. As an appetizer, it is shrimp.
Good answer. AI versus humanity for the belt. Who you got?
I have, I've seen a documentary. It was called Terminator 2. So AI wins early on, but humanity takes it late.
Nice. Biden versus Trump. It's now set, more or less. Who you got? Not who do you want. Who do you got?
Yeah, of course. I feel like I'm going to say Trump because in 16, I said, there's no way Trump could win. I look like a dummy, so I'll say Trump. Hopefully it's a reverse jinx.
There's a swing vote that probably should have gone Biden, but it looks like it's going to go Trump, and that's mm-hmm. going to be the deciding factor.
Mm-hmm.
All right, last one. The Raptors now without Pirtle, who's out, versus you, me, Landsberg, Amy, and a set of well-placed orange cones.
Mm. Toronto wins, but we cover the spread.
Okay, good yeah. answer. All right, that's head-to-head for the week, Maddie.
Love
so
it.
So we did trade deadline, magical day.
Mm-hmm.
We did Oscars, truly magical night.
Yep.
And a little head-to-head.
The name I came up with, Christopher Lee, he was
for
like...
For a biopic.
He played Count Dracula. He served in the Second World War. He was a spy. He was a master fencer. He did opera. He played in 100, 200 movies. Go look up the history of Christopher Lee, who passed away in 2015 at the age of 93.
He was in Star Wars.
Yep. That's my biopic is Christopher Lee. That is
such a great one. I got another one for you. Have you ever heard of the director Russ Meyers?
Yeah.
Yeah. He did the sexploitation film.
Yeah.
I think he'd be a really good indie biopic because he was an independent filmmaker. He kind of pulled himself up by his own bootstraps. And, you know, the films were obviously, you know, like super B movie, really like just women with gigantic proportions. But there were satires. Like, there was a lot of satire in there. So it's a bit of a People versus Larry Flint kind of vibe where it's racy, but it's racy / smart. And like Hustler was way more offensive than the Russ Meyer movies ever were.
Yeah.
The other one is I'm waiting for the Billie Jean King biopic.
That'd be good.
You know, and Martina Navratilova would actually be really good too. There was a I think there was a 30 for 30 about her versus Chris Everett and that rivalry. That would be a great hook for a movie.
Roberto Clemente?
Ooh, that's a great idea. You know, MLB has not done enough to honor Roberto Clemente. They've done some. But in terms of his importance to Latin baseball, he is to Latin baseball what Jackie Robinson is to North American, African-American baseball.
Yep.
Not in terms of being the first, but just in terms of being the great statesman. That's a great idea. I love that idea. He was my dad's hero growing up, actually. So I heard a lot about Roberto Clemente.
That'll do it for us. The next time we talk, trade deadline will be done. The Oscars will be over, and I will enjoy my alcohol-free lunch with you.
We still haven't picked the spot.
Oh, we'll figure that out.
It's got to be Greek food, because Greek food is always so good.
Yeah, it's like a 7.5 out of 10.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.